Translation. While speaking thus, Vidura, whose personal character was esteemed by respectable persons, was insulted by Duryodhana, who was swollen with anger and whose lips were trembling. Duryodhana was in company with Karna, his younger brothers, and his maternal uncle, Shakuni. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. It is said that giving good counsel to a foolish person causes the fool to become angry, just as feeding milk to a snake only increases its venomous poison. Saint Vidura was so honourable that his character was looked up to by all respectable persons. But Duryodhana was so foolish that he dared to insult Vidura. This was due to his bad association with Shakuni, his maternal uncle, as well as his friend Karna, who always encouraged Duryodhana in his nefarious acts. Translation again. While speaking thus, Vidura, whose personal character was esteemed by respectable persons, was insulted by Duryodhana, who was swollen with anger and whose lips were trembling. Duryodhana was in company with Karna, his younger brothers, and his maternal uncle, Shakuni. Om Maginata Miranda Shyatanandana Slakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasvai Shi Gravenma Shi Titanamana Bishtang Stapatam Yena Butale Swayam Lipakadamiam Deratiswapatikam Vanjikopatarubas Chakripishan Nibet Chapatanam Bambane Bavishnavim Onamaha Om Vishnu Buddhaya Krishna Prastai Buddhale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pachane Nibishesha Sanyavari Pashtatarish Hare Krishna. So this is the continuing account of a very tragic sequence of events. Vidura has given his instruction, he's given his guidance to the king, Dhritarashtra, who is so besotted with affection for his son, Duryodhana, that despite many, many years of excellent advice from Vidura, especially Vidura, Dhritarashtra is blinded. He's not only physically blind, but he's spiritually blind also. And of the two, spiritual blindness is far, far worse of the two. Of course, I don't know how many of us, given the choice, would choose to poke our eyes out. But there have been, Bilvamangal Thakur is famous for that. He chose to poke out his eyes with a pin. It's not recommended, but in his case, he was so serious and so focused, and recognizing his distraction by the fairer sex, he chose to give up his eyes rather than continue being distracted. Poked his eyes out. But he has spiritual vision. And poking your eyes out it isn't a step on the path to spiritual vision. We have to purify our vision. And that comes from purifying our intention. If our intention is self-centered, and if it's based upon pleasing senses and mind, then my spiritual vision is stunted. We are stunting our own spiritual vision by our own choice, life after life after life. But Srila Prabhupada is so kind, he's come to the stunted Kali Yuga culture of the whole planet now, but especially prominent in the West. Prabhupada is coming here to give us spiritual vision. How to purify the eyes. Prabhupada says when you're Krishna conscious, you will see Krishna dancing on the altar. I'm certainly a long way from that. Maybe some of you here see Krishna dancing on the altar. I don't know. But Krishna's there. Krishna's right here. Krishna's all around. Everything is Krishna's energy. Everything is Krishna's energy. And to see it separate from Krishna is, that's Maya. To see something separate from Krishna, that's Maya. Prabhupada says, well, how do we see Krishna? How do we see? And Brahma gives the example of the mother with the child. She sees the child's little sock or little booty. She merely thinks of a child. She sees the child's, even sees the child's diaper, and she thinks of a child with love and affection. So the devotee practices how to see Krishna everywhere. And Krishna gives so many examples, how he's the taste in water, the light of the sun and the moon, the sound in ether, the ability in man, etc., etc. So many different ways. So that's to remind us. There was one interview with some journalists in America, and the journalist asked, are you seeing Krishna now? Can you see Krishna? I said, yes. And then one devotee, Rameshwar Prabhu, he butted in. He said, not exactly he sees Krishna, but no, I see Krishna. Just like he's right there behind you. Such is the vision of Prabhupada. We can't imitate that. We shouldn't pretend to. Sometimes we see Krishna in prasadam. When we revere prasadam as the Lord's mercy. For myself, it tastes really good. So, you know, the reverence and worship of the Lord by taking prasadam is one of the processes. But it's attitude. There's a wonderful series of photographs taken by Prabhupada's favorite photographer, Yadubhar Prabhu, here in Prabhupada's rooms. And he's sitting in the little bay window with a big... It was 1973, the installation of Gokulananda. Was it that year, do you remember? And Prabhupada has taken his Vyasa Puja feast. And there's a big pile of rice in the middle and all these little preparations, and very thoughtfully tasting and appreciating the devotion of his devotees. We maybe know ourselves, sometimes a feast is particularly delicious, sometimes a preparation, it's the same recipe, but sometimes it's particularly more delicious than other times. We're actually as we become purified, we become more aware of the spiritual potency. And we can actually taste something very special. We're tasting the bhakti in that preparation. Undoubtedly. So this is the symptom of the saintly person, such as Vidura. They see the spiritual essence of everything, and they guide others on the basis of spiritual understanding. And those who are materially attached, they're really not interested. Even though they may recognize the wisdom, because of attachment, they can't accept that guidance. So in the case of Dhritarashtra, he recognized the wisdom of Vidura, but because of his excessive attachment to his son, Duryodhana, he couldn't accept it. Over and over and over and over again. Krishna Dharma has done a very nice a summary of Mahabharata. I was just reading it yesterday on the Veda base, Bhaktivedanta Veda base. He's done a very nice summary. And I was reading how so many accounts of Vidura giving guidance to Dhritarashtra, not just here, not just in this case, these few verses, but over and over, over again. In fact, when Duryodhana was born, his crying. Any mothers here? Mothers here? So when your baby cries, do you feel urged to go and protect and care for your child? I assume you do. Even though the crying of a baby may be piercing to the eyes of others, to the mother, it's the sweetest sound. And it stirs that protective, oh, let me protect you, let me protect you from hurt, from etc. But in the case of Duryodhana, I don't know what Gandhari's feelings were, but his crying was like the braying of an ass. He had the crying of a donkey. You know, donkeys don't sound to our ears, of course. To the donkey, a donkey's sound is very sweet. He tries to attract the female. Sweet songs, you know. We won't go into details. But the donkey is very prolific, repetitive. But to our eyes, it's hideous. In the same way, Duryodhana, he was like a braying like an ass. And the sages said, better you kill this child. Better you kill this child, newborn baby. He will be the destruction of the entire dynasty. So no parent wants to kill their child. Well, in today's modern world, it happens. The children are being killed by the millions, millions upon millions before they even see the light of day. Such is the state of Kali Yuga society. What a state of affairs. The mother is no longer mother, the father is no longer father, the child is no longer protected. And the children are being slaughtered, the animals are being slaughtered, the humans are being slaughtered. We're being set up for one hell of a karmic reaction. It's on its way. It's happening. Some places it's happening. Other places like here it's yet to come. But the karma is going to come. The karma's there. So the sages, they recognize, they see long distance, they see distance, their vision is beyond this. It's interesting how the vision of the different varnas, it's different according to the modes of nature and according to duty. The Brahmins, they see in terms of lifetimes, what we do now. Yajna, now, austerity, now, will create benefit for the future. Even in the next life. Their vision sees beyond this little lifespan. And they give advice on the basis of long-term good fortune. The Kshatriyas, they see generationally. Their activities is based upon how to perpetuate and nurture and maintain that dynasty. So they're seeing one generation to another. The Vaishyas, they generally see in terms of seasons. They're growing crops. They have to think seasonally when to plant. They have to see. So their vision is not generational. Of course, they want to provide for their family, but it's generally seasonal. And the Shudra, generally, he's with the here and now. He's dealing with the immediate task at hand. It might be dance or theatre, it might be stone masonry, making wonderful stonework for a temple, but his it's short term. So the more one is purified, the longer the vision, the longer term the vision. Until you come to the perspective of the Vaishnava, they're not just seeing in terms of next lifetime, they're seeing from the perspective of eternity. And they have access to eternity by serving the Supreme Eternal. So these different levels of vision are there, and Vidura has that vision. But Dhritarashtra's vision, he can't see beyond his son. So in the divine arrangement, in the divine plan, Dhritarashtra has been placed there, Duryodhana has been placed there, the whole setup has been placed there. Why? Because Krishna, after he departs, Kali Yuga is going to start. And Krishna doesn't want any Kshatriyas in the Kali Yuga. He doesn't want any. In fact, he asks Mahadev, Lord Shiva, to come as Shankaracharya, to preach impersonalism, to hasten the Kali Yuga. Bring it on. How is this possible? How is it the Lord appears to want degradation? So Lord Chaitanya's pastimes can manifest. because his next incarnation is Lord Chaitanya. He comes to save the most fallen. And people are so desperate, society becomes more and more degraded and so disturbing, people come to take shelter of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet. And generally speaking, the less intelligent person needs to suffer before they take shelter of something higher. An intelligent man, just by intelligence, yes, this is the right thing to do. Less intelligent, they can't see. It's Shastra or Shastra. Shastra is a stick. So Shastra or Shastra. So Krishna wanted the battle of Kurukshetra. Everything was placed, everything was set up. Shri Shri Radha, Gokulanand Ki Jai. So everything was set up for the battle of Kurukshetra. Even though Krishna went to the Kurus and even showed his universal form to convince them that he wasn't just giving mundane advice. He was there to, please, give the Pandavas just a village each. But no. Of course, Krishna's past, present and future. He knows everything. So by the divine will of providence, the battle of Kurukshetra took place, and 99.99% of the Kshatriyas were destroyed. No Kshatriyas. So Kali Yuga can roll on. Yes, there was just a small remnant of the Kshatriya dynasty, but it became more and more degraded until today. Nobody wants kings. They want the royal dynasty. No one takes them seriously because they don't take their duties seriously. They don't know their duties. The politicians don't know their duties. The leaders don't know their duties. It's just a facility for exploitation. So this is what happens in Kali Yuga. Talking about when we first opened the manor, I remember Prabhupada sitting on his different Vyasasan. Some of you have probably seen that picture of that Vyasasan. Very ornate. And Prabhupada said one morning in class, he said, don't take birth again in Kali Yuga. Don't take birth again in Kali Yuga. And I was sitting in that doorway right there, in that little corner. And I remember thinking, why, it's not so bad. Hey, it's nice. Here we are in this nice country house. No, it's summertime. No, three square meals. Even if it was just boiled cabbage and rice, it was all right. Great association, chanting Hare Krishna. What's to worry about? This is called short-sighted vision. We just see the immediate moment as we just think it's going to go on and on. No, it doesn't go on and on. Yes, we continue, we're eternal. But the particular arrangement of now, due to the force of nature and the modes of nature and material nature, it's all going to change. Either we're going to move on or we get moved out or whatever. Everything changes. People have lived in quite comfortably in some of the countries over the past 50 years, even since the Second World War. And things have recovered and economically and things are going very nice. Then suddenly, whatever it happens to be, it might be natural disasters, it might be politics, it might be this or that or the other, suddenly they're refugees. Suddenly everything's gone. Everything's gone. There's a song by a band called the Mothers of Invention, led by a singer called Frank Zappa. I didn't like their music particularly, but there was one track called They Said It Couldn't Happen Here. And it kind of, I thought, well, yes. We think, oh, well, that can't happen here. Hey, anything can happen everywhere. So this idea that it can't happen here, it leads to complacency. And spiritual life is anything but complacency. It's easy to get settled in a little, in a comfort zone. But actually it's dangerous. So Prabhupada said, don't take birth again in Kali Yuga. So, got a few minutes for questions, if there's any questions. I'll just read the verse again. While speaking thus, Vidura, whose personal character was esteemed by respectable persons, was insulted by Duryodhana, who was swollen with anger and whose lips were trembling. Duryodhana was in company with Karna, his younger brother, his younger brothers, and his maternal uncle, Shakuni. Any questions? Prabhu?
You know, with Bill Mangal Thakur, I read his story, and at the end, because he lived for 700 years... He lived for 700 years.
He lived for 700 years.
At some point, he did get his eyesight back.
Did he?
Yeah, Krishna gave him the eyesight back.
Still, it's risky, isn't it?
Well, I asked Gaur Govinda Maharaj this question about what he did, what Bhil Mangal Thakur did. And he said, you ought to be on the level of bhava. And he just laughed. But the story with Bhil Mangal Thakur was in that point where the eyesight came back. At some point, his eagerness to see Krishna became very strong. So when that eagerness became strong, then Krishna gave him the eyesight back. Initially, he didn't want to do anything with the material world because he wanted to be... Maya was affecting him. But at some point, when his desire to become... seeing Krishna became strong and nothing else, then Krishna did give him the eyesight back.
So was it material? It was material eyesight. It wasn't just spiritual eyesight. Because the senses, we have our physical senses, which are dependent upon this physical arrangement. But the senses go all the way to the soul. Our mental body has all the senses. Our etheric body has all the senses. The spiritual body has all the senses. The senses go all the way to our very core existence. And there are people who do see things which are beyond our physical vision, you know?
Because the story went, Chintamani, she had a picture of Bhil Mangal Thakur in her place.
Did she?
Yeah. When he poked his eyes out, the blood came out of the picture of the eyes.
Oh, my gosh.
And she was observing, messages were coming to Chintamani, what Bhil Mangal Thakur was doing in his bhajan with Krishna and everything.
Yeah.
At some point, when his eagerness came to see Krishna became strong, Krishna gave him the eyesight back. And in the picture, the eyes came back.
Oh, remarkable. Such are the pastimes of the pure devotees. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the class. I have a question regarding sort of a Vidura's perseverance in terms of offering the counsel to the court of the Kurus. Prabhupada mentions in his purport, the first sentence, it is said that is giving good counsel to a foolish person causes the fool to become more angry. So I'm sure Vidura has that understanding, that his counsel not always comes to bear, is not fruitful. So how come he still continues giving a counsel while he understands that, okay, this makes just Vidura, Duryodhana more and more angry. So why he haven't withdrawn himself earlier? Why he haven't just like...
Because it's my understanding, I'm not a great scholar of Mahabharata, but I understand that Vidura was giving counsel to Dhritarashtra. Everyone listened to the king. He was the king. Even the Pandavas, they had the greatest respect for the king. They didn't always disagree. Whatever Dhritarashtra gave the nod of the go-ahead, yes, he would. Everyone would follow. So he indulged his son Duryodhana, who always wheedling and trying to get, he always wanted his own way, and his father always gave in. So Vidura's advice was to Dhritarashtra. Duryodhana wasn't interested. So Vidura was hoping against hope. Hoping against hope. And finally, after Dhritarashtra had lost everything, he lost everything, he lost his sons, everything. He was, and Vidura gives advice. He says, you know, you're just like an animal. You know, you should go to the forest. And finally, when he's lost everything and he's nothing left to give up, that's when he goes to the forest. But again, it's Krishna's arrangement. Krishna arranges individuals with particular modes of nature, with particular inclinations to take to facilitate his pastimes. But it was Vidura's advice was to Dhritarashtra, and anyone else who'd listen. But he hoping against, and finally, of course, he leaves. Eventually. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, okay. Hare Krishna.
I was wondering when Duryodhan was born and they all immediately suggested to let him go because he was not right for this world. I'm thinking some people are kind of like toxic for people in general, but we keep believing in them. We keep trusting in the process that there will be a transformation, but we might not see the transformation. So my question is it like, do we have to believe in people up to the end for their transformation, or for some people there is just no hope? Just like Duryodhan, there is no hope, and they just said, just give it up immediately. In my perception, I always believe in people and in the transformation, but according to this, my understanding is that not everyone is suitable for that transformation.
I don't think there's a simple black and white answer to that. You know, it isn't as if it's a set of, you know, do's and don'ts. It's up to the individual to gauge what's appropriate. The sages having, you know, self-realized souls, seers having the vision, they can see how things are going to go. The likes of you and I, most of us, a child is born, we don't think, oh, he's going to do this and that and the other. Of course, an astrologer can, a qualified astrologer can give some indication. But we shouldn't go around, executing people on the basis of what they might do in the future. That's the kind of thing of dystopian science fiction stories. You know, a person's guilty until proven innocent. But how much energy we give to others, the compassionate soul sees things and acts on a level, sometimes it's beyond material comprehension. But some persons are, for a person who isn't demonic, it's difficult to kind of comprehend the demonic mentality. And Krishna gives some hints in the Bhagavad Gita about the nature, the mindset of the demonic person. But the pure devotee sees that every living entity is ultimately is actually part and parcel of Krishna, and they deal with them appropriately. And it's knowing what's appropriate. That famous adage: "Hate the sin, not the sinner." We should be careful not to hate the sinner, because it's the modes of nature which are working. With compassion, sees beyond the conditioned state and tries to fan and nurture the slightest inclination of anything spiritual or service, to engage others, whether they're conscious or unconscious, in the service of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada. So because if one is becoming exhausted and depleted by a particular situation, but then again, there's duty as well. We have duty to particular, especially family members, to children. We have duty. We have duty. I can't give a little answer quick in a quick nutshell. I don't think there is one. But without that spiritual vision, we will see things from a materially conditioned perspective, and we can't necessarily see what's appropriate for that individual. An appropriate reciprocation, appropriate behaviour, that's very important. For example, in the four varnas, the Brahmins are very compassionate and humble. The Kshatriyas, on the other hand, they don't display the qualities of the Brahmins. It isn't required. It would be disastrous for Kshatriyas to not guard the principles of Dharma and protect the citizens. So there's different modes of behaviour appropriate for different varnas in society. I don't know if that answers your question. Priyojana?
Interesting aspect to Duryodhana is, number one, he was envious of the Pandavas. It wasn't a case of he knew all Dharma and all these things, but envy poisons.
Mm.
And so he wasn't going to see reason anyway because of his envy, that their character and their qualities. The other thing is, I remember in the Peter Brook film, there was an illustration of the character of Duryodhana, and they said to him, "Look, aren't you ever satisfied?" When he was trying to negotiate it, and he said, "I don't want to be satisfied." That's a demoniac mentality.
Well, that's Peter Brook's, according to the version of Cook, but it demonstrates the mentality.
The mentality,
there is no satisfaction. There isn't any. There isn't any. Which is tragic, because the soul in its pure state is naturally fully satisfied. But how can you and I, how can the eternal spirit soul be satisfied with any arrangement here? Yeah, envy was a big motivation. When Duryodhana saw the wonderful palace provided by Maya Danava, he was overwhelmed by envy even before he got in there. And then, of course, a series of incidents where he falls into the pool inside the palace. There's pools which look like the floor. He falls and he's drenched. And everyone starts laughing at him. Vridhisthira is very grave. He knows what's going on. And Krishna can see this is going to be, because it's part of Krishna's plan. He had to be humiliated. And then he walks into a door, a crystal door. He thinks it's open, it's shut. Bang! Anyone's walked into a door. It's not very nice. But when you're trying to maintain false prestige and you're proud, it's just one thing after another. So he was almost being set up to become ever more inimical to the Pandavas, which is what Krishna wanted. Krishna didn't push him to do that. Duryodhana was using his own independence. So Krishna utilizes the independence of every living entity to carry out his plans. The jiva soul has particular desires and inclinations. He takes birth as an earthworm. And the earthworm is playing its part in the big picture, simply by following his desires. Krishna's not saying, "Well, you got to eat dirt." No, the earthworm is doing great service by eating dirt. But either one way or another, we've got to serve. So we can eat dirt or we can eat rasgullas. The choice is ours. Some other question?
You mentioned the different type of visions, and at some point you said the Shudra, they see only like the here and now, and the Vaishnavas, they see eternity. And so from my understanding, this vision of eternity, in a way, it's also the here and now. It's like the eternal present, from my understanding.
Mm.
So what would be like the difference between the Shudra here and now and the Vaishnava here and now?
Yes. Here and now, yes. Well, the Shudra's here and now. Generally speaking, the Shudra isn't motivated. They'll do what's necessary to maintain their eating and sleeping. And they can be very talented, they can be very loyal. You can have Shudras who are touched by the mode of goodness and they want to serve and give assistance to the Brahmins. And there's Shudras who are touched by passion, and they'll serve the Kshatriyas. The chariot driver is a Shudra. Man, he's got to be brave. He's out there in the middle of a battlefield. He's risking his life. He's not some kind of. He's not a labourer. Shudra. I think we've got a deep misunderstanding of what's meant by Shudra. They're not independently motivated. They serve those who are independently motivated. And when those who are independently motivated are motivated by a desire to utilize their abilities in the service of Krishna, then they're Vaishnava. So Maharaj Ramananda Roy, he came to see Lord Chaitanya. He was carried in a palanquin, yet he was a Shudra because he was serving Maharaj Pataparudra. He was a servant of the king. So those who serve the Kshatriya, they're Shudra. But their position in society might be way above that of a Vaishya. Big responsibilities. So there's those who are Shudra servants who serve the Brahmin, and there's those who serve the Kshatriyas, there's those who serve the Vaishyas. And a barber serves, for example, a barber, he's independent, but he's a servant at the same time. That's kind of, it's very complicated. I don't, you know, I'm just giving a few examples. It isn't just black and white. But in terms of here and now, well, there's a transcendental here and now, and there's an immediacy of satisfying the senses, which is a material mentality. When I'm saying here and now, I'm using the example of a stonemason or an artist. Their concern is this little bubble that they're dealing with. It might be not just today, it might be tomorrow. They've got to prepare the paint for they're going to use, they've got to get the stone, etc. The here and now of the transcendentalist, he's utilizing the here and now fully in the Krishna service. His attention to detail is very, very focused. Attention to detail. It's not as if, oh, I'm in transcendence, we're not bothered about details. No, very detailed, according to his duty. And Srila Prabhupada was a good example. His attention to detail. And then as his movement grew, he designated his, is that the right word, to various managers to look after details, because Prabhupada really wanted to focus on his translating work. But it wasn't easy. Because Prabhupada picked up the bears and monkeys, engaged them in transcendental activities, and not everyone had the qualities. But Prabhupada, I refer to Prabhupada sometimes as a transcendental pragmatist. He utilized what Krishna sent him in the best way possible. And he was able to accomplish an amazing thing, establish Lord Chaitanya's movement in the wasteland of the Western world in the Kali Yuga. Does that, I don't know if it answers your question. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Thank you very much. It's 20 to 9, time for breakfast. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Ki Jai.